Okay. All right. All right. Here we go. Hour number three. It's Monday, and it is time for Dr. Henry Nyman to come back and do his post-mortem of Trump's rather dismal rally. And there are several explanations being proffered and pushed around, some suggesting that it was an online young people's effort to reserve tickets, which were never going to be used for the event, that had something to do with it. I rather think that many people didn't want to go because of the risk. Let's hope there's still that much pragmatic thought left in this country. But perhaps it was both of the above and maybe other things we don't even know about. I think there's certainly a fear factor about rioters that could have caused real trouble there, but didn't, that may have kept others away as well. So there you go. Fox News, the biggest ratings night, 12 million live viewers of Trump's rally. They smashed their ratings record. Even though there was a small crowd in the arena, 12 million live viewers were watching. Trump aides are now doing a damage assessment, trying to debate and come to a conclusion about what kind of and how big future rallies should be after the Tulsa problem. We will find out soon enough. The virus itself, Trump handled it as Trump always does. He called it the Kung Flu during the rally. Well, that's what you'd expect. Couple more notes here. Commentator Harry Vox is reporting that coronavirus testing in the U.S. has finally met the bare minimum at this point. Those are his words, his views. There's a lot going on, much more than I would ever even try to cover, but I try to pull the most provocative and maybe thought-compelling issues. White House has delivered mixed explanations, as I said, on Trump's vow to slow down coronavirus testing. Don't test, don't tell, remember? 9 hand sanitizers, you might want to read this one, have potentially a fatal ingredient in them. I won't tell you what it is because I didn't read the story. But 9 of them have something that is not particularly helpful, apparently. First wave isn't over. It's getting worse, though, as Henry Nyman predicted, forecast the whole thing. More young people now are testing positive for coronavirus in states down near Alabama. So the South and the Southwest are really picking up rather quickly. All right. Henry, welcome back. How was your weekend?
Entertaining.
Yeah, I'm sure you were there.
I watched, and I think that's part of the ratings. Everybody wanted to see the spectacle and see exactly what it was. And
how did he come across? What did you think? I didn't watch it.
It was a major disaster. Number one, it holds 19,000. They said, they're going to, and we talked about this last week, they're going to overflow. It only holds 40,000 next door. They were going to build they actually did build an outside venue. Trump was going to speak at both. Pence was going to speak at both. And it became clear. Well, it was kind of clear all the way along because, they were showing it, live ahead of time. And it just wasn't filling up. You looked at it and there was plenty of space on the floor. They kind of had, good sections of the lower level full, but the upper level was empty. And the upper level, I think, held at least as many as the lower level. Uh-huh. And it was getting closer and closer to the time. And it just wasn't getting that full. And then they showed the outdoor one, and there was nobody at the outdoor one. So there was zero overflow. So anybody that was there, could have got inside. And then, it was a bad split screen. They they had Trump coming out indoor, and they were literally dismantling the stage outdoor while he was speaking. So it was, and then the visual was even worse because all of the empty seats were blue. So where the Trump supporters were, it was red, and where the Trump supporters weren't, it was blue. And, you know, a few people went in the, I mean, they could have socially distanced. They only had it was only a third full. The fire marshal estimated they had 6,200 people there, seats 19,000. So they could have spread out, but they didn't. They were, you know, they were all bunched together. The only people in the upper tier were the ones right behind the stage. And, it was, they handed out masks as they went in, the blue kind of disposable ones. I did not see anybody wearing the blue disposable ones. Some brought their own masks. And, and I would say that the number of masks was well below, 10%. It was probably a few percent. I mean, it wasn't that nobody had masks, but there were very, very few. And, there were some families there. I mean, the kids didn't look that happy. Well, Trump went on for like 2 hours or so, you know, and he didn't say anything new, frankly. He was talking about, what is it, M13 or something, gangs, and he was talking about Hillary, and he was talking about the wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was all, you know, everything he said was 4 years old. And except he talked for about 15 minutes about his ability to drink water with one hand and walk down a ramp. So he went on and on about the event earlier at the Army at West Point. And he gave a demo that he could drink water with one hand. Well, if you look closely, he had a very heavy glass.
Right.
And even with he did do it with one hand, but it was a little bit wavy there. It didn't look as steady as it could have been.
At least he didn't have a straw, right?
He gave an explanation for the two hands.
I see.
You want to know why he needed two hands to drink the water?
There was a slight earthquake at the time.
No. Because
that would have been creative. All right.
Because his ties are silk. And he said that if he drank some of the water and he spilled it on the that the press would give him a really hard time about that. So the second hand wasn't really there to steady the glass. It was to catch any water that might have spilled so that it wouldn't go on his tie.
It didn't look that way when you looked at the picture, though.
Yeah, I know. And then he gave a demo. He drank the water. You know, he took a sip, and then he threw the glass on the ground. So he tossed the glass with most of the water in it, and he showed that he did it. You know, ta-da.
Right there on the stage,
he stuck his landing, right? He threw it right out on the stage. Yeah, I don't think he threw it at any people. He just threw it at the stage. And then he gave a demo, you know, how he could walk down a ramp if it had a railing. So he used to, so the ramp there had a railing, and he showed how he could hold on the railing. And he talked about how bad the other
wait
ramp
a minute,
was.
Wait, excuse me, Henry, wait. Are you saying there was actually a ramp with a railing and he did a demonstration walk?
Oh, yeah. He was doing the ramp in the water for about 15 minutes. I mean, literally.
Shakespearean tragic comic
in the
character.
Water.
I'm telling you, that is really a tragic character.
So, So that was about the only new thing to his, to his whole routine was the ramp and the water. But it was, I mean, like you said, he said the flu, you know, had a bunch of different names, including Kung Flu. And then he made a confession, and that was the highlight of the whole speech. He basically said a confession. And he confessed that, you know, testing really is kind of a dual-edged sword. Because, yeah. You know, when you test more, you find more positives. So that
I gotta
was
write this down.
The bad part. That was the bad part of testing. And then Biden immediately tweeted, test more. And so then they tried to basically walk that back a little bit. So his press secretary said he was just joking. Now, when he said it, he didn't make it sound like a joke. He didn't look like he was joking. And then Navarro said the same thing. It was tongue in cheek. And so he basically said that he told his staff to cut back on the testing. Okay, that's what he said on stage, that they said was a joke. And then he had interviews today or yesterday, I don't remember which, but after the fact, he had two interviews, both of which said, well, were you joking when you said to do that? And he says, well, he wouldn't deny it. He wouldn't say he was joking. He didn't say he didn't tell the staff not to do it. But he says, if I did, I would be way ahead of the game. So that was kind of a confession that his confession was not a joke. And then in another interview, he said, the testing is unfair. Because when you do more, you get more positives. So
twice said unfair.
After his confession, unfair, oh, his word, testing is unfair. Just like taking the passengers off the ship was unfair because it wasn't his fault they got infected. And if he took them off the ship, they were going to affect his numbers. So remember, when you asked, did I think he really cut back on testing? I said, well, I don't know. It just seemed suspicious that the CDC would have done that poor of a job of testing. They ran into some problems and there were delays when they talked about they were going to do surveillance. And they kept saying there were delays. They never really explained why there were delays. Because if you recall, all they were doing was something as simple as they were using their existing surveillance network for influenza. And all they were going to do is the same thing they did in Seattle, which was they were going to do their normal testing on the same people that had influenza-like illness. And the only variation was that if they tested them for flu, which is what they would do anyway, and they tested negative for flu, then they would test them for COVID. It was that simple. So all they had to do is send the test kits to their network and say, if they're negative, test them for COVID. You've already got a sample there. You've already got the patient there. You've already got the patient's chart. You've already got the patient's symptoms. You've already got the results of a flu test. And the sample that you collected, you test a second time. After the tested for flu and they were negative, you go back and take that sample and test it again for COVID, which is exactly what they did in Seattle. And that's how they got their first community case. It was a high school student. He had flu-like symptoms. They tested him for flu. He was negative. They tested him from COVID. He was positive. And then they got the sequence, and the sequence was, you know, a derivative of the original sequence that was the first case in the U.S. And that's what they were supposed to be doing. And frankly, they've got, you know, testing centers on the East Coast. They're not all on California or Washington. They're not only on the West Coast. They're throughout the country. And all they had to do is say, go ahead and run a second test. Here's the kit. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do that. They kept saying that that was delayed, and that was delayed. And I said, when you asked, you know, you think that had anything to do with Trump delaying it, I said, it sounded pretty suspicious that it was that hard to do the surveillance. The only thing they were doing were testing people from China. And they knew, I mean, anybody that was paying attention knew that that was a problem. Because I remember it was the 17th anniversary of the admission to the registering for the Metropole Hotel. It was February 21st. And on February 21st, the virus had already been identified in Iran, and they had talked about there were 50 people dead and was in multiple cities, and the virus had already been identified in northern Italy. And they were having, you know, very severe cases, and the ICUs were being overrun. And the bunch of countries in Europe got their first positive, and it was one case after the other. They had been to northern Italy, and then it was in Algeria, and then it was in Nigeria, and then it was in Brazil. And then it was in Mexico, and it was in Canada, and it was everywhere except the United States. And it was obvious that the only reason it wasn't in the United States is because the United States was not testing. So it was clear that in February, when everybody else in the world, or at least in Europe and Africa and South America and North America, was getting positives from Italy, People from the United States go to Italy. They actually had a fashion show in Milan, Italy, in February. And they actually closed it down because there was too much virus there. And people from New York went to that fashion show. And they were not positive because they were not tested. So they came back with COVID sequences, symptoms. After going to a fashion show that was in northern Italy where various travelers had been and were positive for COVID, and the U.S. had no cases. The first two cases in New York, one was in New Rochelle, and he had not had any foreign travel. He'd been to Florida, and he'd been to Israel, but he hadn't been there in months. So he had no recent travel. And there was one person from Iran who had come to New York. And those were the first two positives there. They didn't test anybody that went to the fashion show in Italy two or three weeks earlier. So the point is that they weren't doing the surveillance. If they were doing surveillance, they would have been doing surveillance in New York, and they would have had positives well in advance of when they had their first positive. And as soon as they saw the sequences, they knew both of those sequences came from Europe and the Middle East. They didn't come from China. But in any event, so I'm virtually positive that Trump A, limited testing initially, and thought he could just talk down the virus. And he would just say, we only got 15 cases. He didn't count any of the cases on the ships. He just counted the cases that were here. They were all imports. They were relatively mild. And he said that, you know, we were going to be down to one case in a week or two. And those were kind of famous last words. And he thought he could just talk away the virus. And then he thought he could just ignore the virus. So he ignored the virus until well into February. Or I think it was March even. It was in March. Yeah, he didn't do anything in January, February. And, you know, the things he did do were, you know, I don't know how many times I said, you know, he's closing the barn door after the horse is already gone.
At least 100.
That's exactly what he was doing. Yeah, the virus was already here when he went, and he was going to limit travel from foreign nationals. He wasn't doing anything about U.S.
cases.
It was so
bad.
And first he was just doing Wuhan, then he was doing China, and then way after the fact,
he decided to do
Europe.
Right? No idea.
So all of the limitations were way, way after the fact. And there's data now that said it was even earlier. I mean, there's data that says it was in China in like September and October. It was in sewer water in Italy in December. I mean, the virus had been spreading before it had even been announced that there was anything going on in China.
It was already loose.
Well in advance.
We got to look at the sequence. Trump, we know, doesn't think for himself. And then we ask the logical next question. Who was advising him? And the easy, quick answer is Tony Fauci in the beginning, but throughout, Jerry Kushner and the princess. Those are his top two advisors.
Navarro warned him early on. He tried to straighten him out in January. He said, you know, this is an issue here. There's something going on in China. It looks, I mean, by the time he told him that, it was public. It was a coronavirus. It was public. It was a novel coronavirus. Actually, the entire sequence was public by the 11th of January. And it was clear that the closest virus to it was the SARS virus from 2000 to 2003. So it was a novel coronavirus. It was SARS. Like it was, you know, they named it SARS-CoV-2.
You were
2.0. Correct. That's what you said, and that's what the sequence said. I mean, it's not an interpretation thing.
Right.
I mean, there's a database. It's like doing a search. You copy and paste the sequence, and you click the button that says blast. And the default is it gives you the top 100 matches in order. And you can see it matched the SARS virus in 2002-2003. It matched the civet cats. It matched the SARS virus in 2004. Those were the closest matches. It was SARS. But it had evolved. I mean, it had changed. In 17 years, but the closest match was a novel SARS coronavirus. And it was, and there were already plenty of cases. I mean, they initially said there were 41 lab confirmed cases that were in the vicinity of the fish market. And 41 was a lot. And then when they started exporting them, they said there were tens of thousands because they were picking them up from Wuhan that had 19 million people. And if there's 19 million people, not that many people are going to Thailand, I guess. There weren't that many people going to Thailand.
You're right. That was the big destination.
And if they're picking up positives and they picked up one in Japan, and by the time they wrote the paper, they had a third one. So they already had three exports. And with 19 million people meant that there were thousands, if not tens of thousands of people that were infected in China. And so it was much more. There was in the whole SARS outbreak, there were only 7,700 in like 6 months. And this was in a relatively short period. There were already that many people in one city, in Wuhan itself. There were 10,000 or 20,000 cases in Wuhan. So it was obvious what was going on. And it was obvious. And I don't know how many times I said, we're flying blind because we weren't testing. We had no idea where the virus was. We had no idea how much virus was there. And we weren't doing anything about it. We weren't doing contact tracing on the ones that we weren't testing. We were doing it on a limited number that we were testing, but we were only testing people that came from China. So there were plenty of people from Europe that weren't being tested. And there was nothing, there was no activity for community spread. The surveillance labs were just delayed. So anyway, back to his rally. The rally was, all those blue seats, but they were packed in. The ones that were there were packed in. And Trump said, he's so proud of his warriors. He called them warriors. Now, if you recall, he called the elderly population warriors because they were battling the virus so that to save the economy, so that basically they were his warriors, and they were going to sacrifice their life, and they were going to die for the U.S. economy. So that was the cause, and that's part of the reason he's not doing that well with the over 65 now, because not that many wanted to volunteer to be his martyrs or whatever, or warriors, he called them. So now he talked to this crowd, and he said, that they had the metal detector machines blocked, and they couldn't come in, and they couldn't get in, and people, weren't able to get into the event, and why there were empty seats. And it was ridiculous because, anybody that wanted to get in could get in. And even if they didn't have a ticket, they could get in because, they were going to do this overflow thing, And they weren't there. It wasn't that they couldn't get in. Maybe they were watching on TV, but they were not at the event. And so then he started talking about his warriors, because these guys went and in spite of, and then he also blamed the network. He blamed especially MSNBC because they were warning not to go because of the virus. So he said that he scared them away because he warned them about the virus. Now, you have to realize that they announced before everybody had gotten in the door that six of Trump's advanced staff had tested positive for the virus. So he had his advanced team there, and I'm not sure if they brought the virus or got infected. I think they got it infected in Tulsa. So they came to Tulsa and they were infected, included two Secret Service agents. So they already had six positives there. And it wasn't safe. And then if you looked at how it was set up, I mean, it was a normal stadium. But if you think about that in terms of passing on the virus, that all these guys that were packed in, they were literally shoulder to shoulder. Virtually nobody was wearing a mask. And they were standing up and shouting. So if you're standing up and shouting, that's the equivalent of spitting on everybody below you. So the people that were standing up were actually getting sprayed by anybody that had the virus.
What was an aerosol bath?
So that's essentially what how it was set up. And the only place they really had a lot of people in the upper deck was right behind the stage. So they would have been spraying all of the poster children, the ones that stand behind Trump for the camera so they can be seen holding up all their posters. So they were getting sprayed by the upper deck. And And then today, they announced that two more of the advanced staff who attended the rally were also positive. And in addition to the two that were positive, they expected many more based upon who was positive.
I think there were two more staff. Today, perhaps, I think. Anyway.
Correct. The difference was the sixth on Saturday were identified prior to the event. So they announced and said, well, they had mm-hmm. six advanced teams positive, but they would not be attending the event. The two that were announced today did attend the event.
Mm-hmm.
They were tested after the event, and they were positive. And then whoever was doing the testing, I think law enforcement or public health indicated that there would be more positives that based upon who the six that were positive ahead of time and the two that were positive today indicated that other people would have been in the same position as the two positives today, or other ones already had symptoms and they still were waiting for the test results. But they were confident that the two that were positive today that attended the rally, there will be more that attended the rally. So there were clearly Trump staff that were infected who attended the rally. There were Trump staff who were advanced people who were infected, that were lab confirmed. And then there undoubtedly were more in the 6,200 people. And in a stadium, you know, in an arena where they're set up like that, and they're literally all packed together. They're all shoulder to shoulder. There was, you know, if they wanted to spread out, they could have, but they didn't. The upper decks were still almost completely empty except behind the stage. And they were all jammed in and literally shoulder to shoulder. Every seat was full in the immediate area of the state. It wasn't.
I want to go back to your point about the obvious incline of the seating array in the arena and those above those below in aerosolized micro droplets all the way.
Exactly. So they were going to get the virus all over their hats and visors and signs, and they were going to take the virus back with them. They were going to put it in the suitcase and take it back to wherever they came from. They were going to put it in their RV and take it back. And in addition to inhaling the mist, and even if they had a mask on, the mask is better for somebody in front of you and somebody behind you, because the masks don't fit that tight and that the virus can more easily get in the sides and the back than they can the front. And so these are just, you know, fish in a barrel, so to speak. I mean, they're just right in front of people that are standing behind and screaming and yelling. And they didn't have to spit. It was worse than spit. If it was spit, it would only hit one or two people. If it was just yelling out this mist, then they were basically showering the, you know, many rows in front of them. And it was just a cheer.
Up to 17 to 20 feet if you're yelling.
Right. And you got elevation, so it can kind of just
further.
Keep.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's
what a scene. What a scene.
The setup, right. So what you had is everybody packed together in the lower levels. The upper levels were essentially empty except right behind the stage. And Trump was shocked. I mean, he saw all those blue seats there, and you know, they had pictures of him getting off the plane when he returned, and he did not look happy, and that was another iconic.
No, his tie was off,
opinion.
And he had a crumpled up MAGA hat in his hand.
He looked
like he had been, you know, done several rounds in the gym in a boxing ring. It just didn't look good.
Yep. And
well, he's 74 years old. So, he got up there and he did the best he could. He was clearly deflated. His ego was battered before he even started. So did he rise to the occasion?
He knew when they flew in, he could see that there weren't enough cars in the parking lot. I mean, he knew it was a problem before he got there. And I'm sure they gave him some description of what the crowd looked like and or didn't look like. And
got it.
But what's he doing tomorrow?
I don't know. What's he doing tomorrow? No.
Well, if you just went to Tulsa and had 6,200 people and everybody talked about how dangerous the whole situation was, and you found out that six of your staff were positive prior to the event and two plus were positive during the event, what would you do next?
Well, you'd make sure all the disclaimers were signed. Then you'd get yourself tested at least three times in one day.
You go to Phoenix and make sure the disclaimers for the 3,000 students in Phoenix tomorrow have signed their disclaimers.
I didn't know he was going to Phoenix. What's going on in Phoenix? A graduation?
No, these are just students for Trump, I guess, at a mega church. I mean, you can't make this up. A mega church that says they have installed this air filtration system that will get rid of 99.9% of the coronavirus. And it just so happens to have been invented by the church members. So this is a product that they're going to advertise.
That's
and
an
they're
going to
put 3,000 students from Phoenix, which is running out of ICU beds, which got going before Florida and Texas and North Carolina got going. Phoenix had virus like a month ago. I mean, they published sequences. They were all the Italian strain. Phoenix is loaded with virus. Their hospitals are almost full. They're the same one that the healthcare Banner Health made an announcement like 2 or 3 weeks ago on how they were running out of beds and that they were telling their hospitals to stop doing elective surgeries and to increase the number of ICU beds. This was at least two weeks ago. And they've been reporting 1,500 to 2,000 cases each day, new cases. And so now he's going to go to this mega church for these 3,000 students for Trump to give them, you know, let them see how great this this air filtration system
works. Okay,
but
so
just in case they have to sign the disclaimer that they hold the Trump organization, the church, harmless for any problems they might have with coronavirus. And then while he's there, he's also going to celebrate the construction of the 200th mile of the wall. So he's going there to commemorate the wall in Phoenix, which is Phoenix the wall's at Tucson. The mega church is at Phoenix, so he's going to both. He's going to Tucson and Phoenix.
Is this
Phoenix.
The Henry?
Both
is this
of which
the Arizona
overrun with virus?
Is this the Arizona stop on his rally tour? So he's banging one off right away. Is this the Arizona stop, or is there another rally?
No, it's technically not a rally. It was Tucson is to commemorate the 200th mile of the wall.
I see.
So there's, in fact, I don't think it's new wall. I think it's just replacing wall. But
he said
200 miles
they,
worth
exactly.
of something.
They've rehabilitated 200 miles of the old rotten wall.
Right. So the 200th mile is being completed tomorrow, and he's there to christen it or whatever. and that's happening in Tucson. And since he's going to be in Arizona anyway, he's going to Phoenix. And there, this church has set up this 3,000 Students for Trump rally. And they're announcing that they've got this air filtration system that the church members invented, and it'll remove 99.9% of the virus. But if you think about it, you're going to be most susceptible to somebody that coughs in your face or yells in your face. So that filtration system's not going to do anything between the time somebody yells and you get exposed to the virus that comes out of their mouth. You know, it might do something on recirculation. So it might do something to somebody that comes in an hour or two afterwards. It's not going to do anything for 3,000 people packed shoulder to shoulder screaming and yelling because Trump is there to say how great it is that they're going to, you know, campaign for him or whatever they're going to do for him. And the amazing thing that when he's saying, you know, at the rally, when he was saying that you're warriors, they are warriors, but they're not warriors for Trump. They're warriors for the virus. I mean, they're there and they're positioned to basically distribute the virus to the other people that are there. And those that don't have the virus are there to receive the virus and then take the virus back to wherever they came from to go to Tucson. And they're going to do the exact same thing in Phoenix. So his warriors are basically doing the virus's dirty work. And then he's going to help the virus along by limiting testing. So you won't even be, you literally can't see the virus and you can't detect the virus. So he's going to go ahead and send the virus out and you're not going to have any idea where it is. You're not going to be able to do any contact tracing because you're not testing.
Wow.
So you don't know who got infected. And this is his plan. And the U.S. is, you know, has numbers skyrocketing in all of these locations. I mean, tonight, I don't know what the explanation is, but as of 7 o'clock, I think it was around 7 o'clock local time, California, how many cases do you think they reported today?
They got to be up to, what, 3,000, 4,000?
Yeah, that was last week.
Oh,
6,490.
Wow. 6,490. Is this an issue of testing, or is this an issue of more cases, or both?
It's more cases. And the reason it's more cases is that the hospitalization rates are up and the percent positives are up. And so if it's over testing, if they're testing a lot, then the percent positive goes down because they're testing a lot of people that aren't infected. Mm-hmm. And so if they're doing it, and most people would say the correct amount of testing, they'll end up getting something like 1%. So if they get it down to 1%, that indicates that, you know, that they're picking up most of the cases that are there. But they're not at 1%. They're at 8% or 10% or 20%. Those are what the numbers are. So it's not.
So they're
the
up
testing.
To 6,000 now. Wow. That's a big jump.
6,490. And that, I don't even know if that was the, hold on, let me refresh.
You know, did you know what the name of the church in Phoenix is? It's called the Dream City Church. Perfect.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Right.
Located on Cave Creek Road.
Yeah. You can't make this stuff up. And so, I mean, first he goes to Tucson, I mean, Tulsa, which is, you know, having a dramatic increase in cases. And then he goes to Phoenix and Tucson, which are probably two of the worst cities in the country. Well, probably not the country, it's the world. The U.S. is number one on the number of cases. So they're up to 6,000. There were you know, significant number of cases over the weekend, mm-hmm. even though mm-hmm. Usually the numbers are lower. Even today, the numbers are usually lower because today most states are reporting what came in on Sunday, and right. a lot of them aren't really tallying it that well. So today there were 29,000 cases. Yesterday there were 27,000 cases. The day before there were 32,000 cases. Before that, there were 30,000. So there's about 30,000 a day now. And the top states are the same top states. It's California, Texas, Florida, and Arizona are the top four states. But more of the southern states are kind of getting in the 1,000 to 1,500 range. And so the lion's share of the cases are in the south. But some of the, you know, northern cases, there still have a reasonable number. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, New York went to phase two. So they're doing 500 or 600 new cases a day. And mm-hmm. I think those numbers may go up by, well, there's usually a couple of week delay or so. And what they're finding in Florida is that the average age is getting lower. So their average age in Florida is 37. So they have a lot of 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds that are testing positive. So the governor says, well, that's good news because, you know, they do much better with the virus. And so the fatality rate is going to go down because they're getting all these 20 and 30-year-olds that are testing positive. But the problem with that is that these are precisely the people that are likely to spread the virus because, A, they think they're invincible, and, B, even if they got a little bit of a cough, they figure, well, it's not a big deal. And they'll be out and about spreading the virus more than, you know, elderly population or, you know, mm-hmm. instead of nursing home, they kind of have confined to the nursing facility. So these guys are going to be out and about and spreading the virus, and they're eventually going to hit older population because the level of virus in the given area is going to continue to go up. And some of them will infect their parents or their grandparents. And they'll just be, you know, it'll be a little bit delayed, but you're just going to have a whole lot of virus in the area transmitting because you're getting a younger population that's going to be more mobile and it's going to spread the virus. So he thinks it's good news because they got 20-year-olds that are positive, but the 20-year-olds are just gonna, you know, go to bars and restaurants, and they're gonna spread the virus. So in any event, the numbers are going up in the South. They're going to continue to go up. This is the early part. The deaths are still low, but the deaths are delayed. So the deaths will, in a couple of weeks, the deaths will start going up dramatically again. And their plan, the Republican convention's planning on Tallahassee. You know, they're going to be overrun with virus by August. You know, the numbers.
Middle of August, yeah.
Right.
Well, fun things to look forward to. Yep. I wonder when we're going to start hearing about the results of the fallout from Tulsa.
Well, it'll take a couple of weeks. It'll take a couple of weeks before they start showing up at the doctor's office, and then yeah, you know, it'll be another week or two after that before you'll start seeing the numbers go up because the first cases, you know, are going to be kind of a blip. They're already got a lot of cases. So, you know, you start getting, you know, 10, 20, 30, it's not so much, but you get that multiplied by two or four times, then you get a couple replications, and all of a sudden the numbers will be more obvious. But
all right.
You'll see them. What you'll see before, you'll see the results of Tulsa, is you'll see the deaths start to go up. And you'll see the ICUs being overrun, you know, full, and they need to bring in more more mobile units to handle the hospitalized cases. That's what you're going to see coming up in the next couple of weeks or so.
Okay, Henry. Well, good wrap-up, good report on what a scene it all is. I don't know. So the Dream City Church, Phoenix, tomorrow. Oh, and they're going to wear masks, it is said. The audience.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Might be a mask revolt.
Okay. We'll see. Well, they will if Trump does. But, you know, Trump isn't going to. And if the pastors or whoever, the inventors or whatever, wear them, they might. But we'll see. It'll be another spectacle.
So. Indeed. All right. Thank you, Henry. Get
I'll
some sleep. Talk to you tomorrow. We'll see. All right. Okay. That's our program on Monday. We made it. And a lot of diversity tonight. We'll be back tomorrow and tell you about Phoenix. Have a good night. Have a good day tomorrow. Remember, eat good food. Give your immune system the best possible support you can by not eating toxic GMO MSG Foods. Take care. Talk tomorrow.